From KXCV KRNW, it's Now Showing with your host, Patty Hawley.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. On this afternoon's program, the Allied Arts Council helps area students experience the arts. The St. Joseph Community Chorus opens its season under new leadership. The local music scene is alive and well in Northwest Missouri, and Dr. Carol Fry takes a look at the law-abiding citizen. The Allied Arts Council is working to help schools in the St. Joseph area. Kathy Ketter is the operations manager at the council. She says the Artists in the Schools program gives students the chance to see the creative process in action.
It's a program that was developed in 1982 in an effort to get working artists into the classroom so that students have an opportunity to see artists up close and personal and to realize that artists are people just like them. And it started with 8 artists on the roster. We now have 15. We have visual artists, we have performing artists, we have storytellers, we have musicians, a broad range to try to fit different teachers' curricular needs.
Are these artists, do they stay in the schools for a while? Do they work like for a week with the students? Are they there for one day? How does the program work?
They normally are there for one session, and we have a booklet that we distribute to all the teachers in St. Joseph and also in the surrounding area towns with the roster and the description of the artist. Most of the artist sessions are probably 60 minutes. Now, some schools will request one artist to come and spend a whole day and do 6 sessions in a day, but for the most part, it's just a single session.
Why is this important?
It's important. You know, there have been studies that have been done that show children learn in lots of different ways. Some learn more by movement, some learn more by seeing things visually. So, you know, we have tied the artist descriptions to the Missouri Show Me standards so that, you know, the teachers, if they're teaching, let's say, geometry, we have one artist who is an architect. You know, have him come in. We have a stained glass artist who also uses, you know, a lot of math in what he does. You know, I think teachers, if they look through the booklet, and they can find different ways to fit different teachers into their curriculum.
This has been going on since the 80s. You've had some history and some time to look back at the program. Has it been a successful program?
It has been successful. With No Child Left Behind, a lot of the teachers don't have the time or the ability to get as many artists into the classrooms. It's designed more as an exposure session, and you know, we feel it is still a very beneficial program. And we find a lot of times also we're used in private schools and homeschools because we're reaching students who possibly don't have art in their class, you know, in their school at all, in any capacity.
Teachers who may not have received the booklet, how can they get a hold of one of these booklets?
Well, they can certainly call the Allied Arts Council. We have one that, you know, we have ones we can mail out to them. We also have the entire artist roster posted on our website, along with request information as to how to request an artist to come to the schools.
When you're looking for artists to include in the program, what is it you're looking for?
Well, we're looking, of course, for artists that, you know, have a good connection with kids. You know, that's number one. And number two, we have an arts education committee of the Allied Arts Council, and that oversees this program. They're the ones that kind of choose the artist, and then we evaluate the program year to year. We get good feedback, you know, and kind of go from there. So we're looking for artists who can connect. We're also looking for artists who are available with 2-week notice to take an hour off or 2 hours off or even a whole day off to go do a performance. One of our most popular artists is a bagpiper. His full-time job, he is a radio operator at the Missouri State Highway Patrol. So there have been times where he has gone, you know, and talked a little bit about how, you know, he has his work career and then he has his music career. And in fact, he's gone and talked to a school on a career day. We've had career day, you know, teachers who have used it. So, you know, it's... it's very important, I think, for students to realize you don't have to be a full-time artist to necessarily be interested in the arts and have arts in your life.
Are these artists from the St. Joseph area, or are they from the state? Where do they come from?
Most of them are from the St. Joseph area, and this program is free to the St. Joseph schools. It's a $20 charge for schools outside of St. Joseph, and the artists are paid just a very modest stipend that really has not gone up too much over the years because, you know, we do what we can do, and most of them are so committed to the program, they're happy with what they get.
You can find more information about the Allied Arts Council's Artist in the Classroom program on their website at stjoearts.org. The St. Joseph Community Chorus will introduce its new artistic director at its fall concert this weekend. Dr. David Benz has been the Associate Artistic Director for the Chorus for the past 5 years.
The theme of the concert is titled Songs of the People, which is a program of folk music from around the world, ending with five American songs by Omaha composer Jackson Berkey. His music is so fresh and definitely out of the norm, and he definitely knows the spirit of the American people. Jackson Berkey is probably best known as the featured keyboardist for the Grammy Award-winning group Mannheim Steamroller, and has been with that, is actually a founder of that organization, that ensemble, and so he's touched many lives through his compositions as well as through his performing.
So will the pieces that you're performing of his, will they be similar to what we hear from Mannheim Steamroller?
Well, it has to be similar because he does much of the writing for Mannheim Steamroller. And, of course, as we think of Mannheim Steamroller, we think of a very unique sound. Again, you hear the freshness of music in their sound, which I think is one of the things that made Mannheim Steamroller so popular. And, of course, Jackson Berkey is the kind of the fingers and the mind behind how that music gets produced and presented, whether it's on recording or in live performance. And, of course, his wife is also a keyboardist with the group, Amita, and she's a very important part of his music. She's actually a professional choral conductor in Omaha, director of an organization, a choir, called Soli Deo Gloria, to God Alone. And that ensemble is the primary recording ensemble of all of Jackson's choral music. So when you hear his music on recording, it is usually Soli Deo Gloria from Omaha.
Okay. Back to the St. Joseph Community Chorus. Is there anything that will stand out in this concert, something you're very excited about?
Well, I'm excited that it's my first concert, so it's definitely a different experience for me as artistic director. I've served the organization the last 5 years as the associate artistic director. The last 5 years, let's see, I guess we're year 24 through 29 for Frank Thomas. Frank was the artistic director for the community chorus for the last 29 years. And the chorus certainly existed before then, but it became known as the St. Joseph Community Chorus when Frank became the artistic director 29 years ago. So certainly my first concert to be the artistic director is exciting, and I must add, kind of nervous as well. Because there's such a wonderful history, and I'm certainly wanting to be sure that I carried forward the good traditions of the ensemble. And, of course, it's a wonderful community of people to work with, the singers of the chorus.
Tell me a little bit about them. Who makes up the St. Joseph Community Chorus?
Largely, the St. Joseph Community Chorus are community members of our own community right here in St. Joseph. Many of them are long-term singers. Some of them would have been in the ensemble the whole time that Frank has been artistic director. And certainly we've had a wonderful new number of members this fall. The group right now is approximately 95 singers. And some of those singers are from our larger regional community that reaches down. I think the southernmost members are from North Kansas City. The westernmost members are from Hiawatha, Kansas. We have people coming down from Trenton and about a half an hour or over to Cameron to the east. So it is a nice regional community that reflects, I think, a really vibrant group of people who are very committed to choral music and to community through their ensemble as well as St. Joseph.
Does the community chorus follow a theme throughout the season?
The theme I've selected for this year is the voice of community. And the reason I've done that is has several different layers and meanings to me. First of all, the choir in itself is a wonderful community. It's a place of connection and voice. And of course, the community that we represent from its earliest days has been a very cultural center or place where we have seen music and architecture and art. And certainly as America moved west, many of the people came through St. Joseph. So the history of St. Joseph includes community singing from its earliest days. And so I wanted to reconnect to that early history. I first saw this documented around 1890 when there was an organized community choir. And so there's a wonderful history that we're a part of and continuing forward. And hopefully, through the chorus, continuing to build community with our young people and future generations of St. Joseph. So it's really important to me that we celebrate and do the process of community through our singing.
The St. Joseph Community Chorus Concert will be this Sunday, beginning at 3 o'clock at the Fulkerson Center at Missouri Western State University. The live music scene is alive and well in Northwest Missouri. Those live performances include a wide variety of music types. Fresh Cut Grass is one of the local music groups that performs in the area. Ann Brock is one of the members of that group.
Fresh Cut Grass is a trio. It's me and my husband, Terry Brock. He plays fiddle and guitar and sings. And then we have Dennis White on banjo and guitar. And we play, it's acoustic music, it's bluegrass, Americana, some country music, some folk music. It's kind of just a blend of, you know, what we think are good songs.
It's gone away in yesterday, and now I find myself on the mountainside, where the rivers change direction. Across the Great Divide.
We have some originals from Terry, and then also some songs from a friend of ours. And then, of course, you know, we do some cover songs also.
Now, you have a couple of CDs. Tell me about producing those CDs and some of the music that might be on those.
Yeah, the first one we did is actually called Fresh Cut Grass, and it is the trio, and it's... you know, it's bluegrass, the folk, acoustic music. And we did that mostly in the Kansas City area, most of the recording in that area. And then we also have another CD that Terry and I recorded. And it is, it probably would be considered a little more country. There, and we have original tunes on there and some fiddle tunes, and there's a bluegrass tune on there, so it kind of encompasses just a lot of the things that Terry and I have done over the course of our music years.
Guide me home, my Georgia moon, to the one that loves me so.
Are there lots of opportunities for you to perform in this area?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, we've been really very lucky to be able to play as much as we have. We play festivals and fairs and small concert halls and, you know, some private engagements for people as well. So, yeah. We've had a lot of opportunity in the Midwest to play.
What about coming up? Where might people be able to see you performing?
We perform with, you know, some country music groups around the area. And so we have a website, you know, that you can check our website for upcoming dates also. That is Brock Party, BROCKparty.com. And we keep it updated all the time. So we have all the information on there.
I wanted to ask you, do you think that this area is supportive of locally produced music? What kind of atmosphere is there to support what you're doing?
Oh, I think definitely the area is, in many ways. I mean, you know, there are lots of opportunities to play in this area. You know, we've played Trails West for many years, various music stores are very willing to carry local artists' recordings, which is really nice. And I think there are a lot of people in St. Joe who are just supportive of their local musicians as well. I see that a lot.
Do you see the music scene growing in St. Joe or holding steady, or are people really aware of it?
You know, there is a huge music scene in St. Joe. All you have to do is really look in the paper on Friday and see how many groups are playing, you know, at the various locations in St. Joe. It's amazing. So I think there is a lot of music going on here.
Anne Brock is a member of the music group Fresh Cut Grass from St. Joseph, Missouri.
Sir Francis Bacon, the Renaissance essayist, warned of the danger of revenge. Revenge, he wrote, is a kind of wild justice which the more man's nature runs to it, the more ought law to weed it out. Bacon's words seemed to fit the film A Law-Abiding Citizen perfectly. For one thing, the desire for revenge seems to be central to our nature, a passion inherited from a million or so years of evolution. So most of us enjoy seeing vengeance enacted and what we call justice done. Most stories tend to glorify successful revenge. Law-Abiding Citizen, a film that's out right now, proposes a contrary view. Pity the film's plot is so muddy and totally improbable. In the opening segment of Law-Abiding Citizen, we see a home invasion. Two hoods, Clarence Darby and Bill Reynolds, burst into Clyde Shelton's home, beat and stab him, and rape and murder his wife and daughter before his eyes. The scene shifts to months later in the district attorney's office with assistant D.A. Nick Rice, played by Jamie Foxx, prosecuting the murders. Rice is hyper-ambitious and wants to protect his 97% conviction score at all costs, so he gets Darby to testify that his buddy did the killing in return for a light sentence. Thus, Reynolds gets the needle. Trouble is that Darby is the psychopathic murderer, and he gets only a 5-year sentence in return for lying about his partner. Clyde Shelton, played with tooth-grinding passion by Gerard Butler, is horrified at the light sentence for the killer. He braces Rice, who claims that he had no choice, that there were evidence issues. But Clyde witnessed the horror in his house and knows the truth. His colleagues had doubts about the plea bargain deal, but Rice forges ahead. Is it just his ego? Does he want just another score on his record with an easy conviction? film certainly suggests that. Fast forward 10 years, about the length of time it takes to get an execution carried out after all the appeals these days. Reynolds, strapped down for the needle, protests his innocence in the killings. The execution is supposed to be painless, like going to sleep, Rice tells Sarah, his assistant. But Reynolds suddenly starts screaming, bucking his body, obviously in great pain. What happened? Well, someone had tampered with the chemicals being pumped into Reynolds' body, adding something to send him out in agony. Guess who? Clyde is happy to confess and go to jail where he wants to be, still exacting his revenge on anyone who had anything to do with the failure of the system to get justice. Revenge, they say, is a dish best served cold, and Clyde is cold indeed. The trouble is that his revenge soon gets totally out of hand, exacted not just on criminals, but those who are only peripherally involved in the case. Clearly, he's gone insane. Now, let it be said that I think there are a couple of interesting parables here worth thinking about. Rice, the prosecutor, is overly ambitious, more interested in scoring convictions to advance his political career than in doing justice. As Clyde outsmarts him at every turn, Rice gets his punishment for his hubris, even having to fear for the safety of his own family. Our sympathy is initially with Clyde. It's he who's lost his family, but he's clearly gone around the bend in his desire for vengeance. Even from prison, he carries out his killings, so we lose our sympathy for him because of the excess of his revenge. And it's here that this film goes totally off track. In the interest of doing a lot of special effects explosions and violent action, the story becomes ridiculously implausible. We learn that Clyde had been an ace spook for the CIA, specializing in figuring out assassination plots when nobody else can do the job. This background is supposed to convince us that he could actually get all these killings done while locked up. But how? Actually, we never quite know. Clyde must have had an accomplice, but we never see who it is, and the final sequence is almost laughably implausible. The film has some good performances, especially by Gerard Butler as Clyde, and Jamie Foxx has come a long way as an actor since his TV days. So Law-Abiding Citizen is a film with some good performances and an interesting spin on Francis Bacon's dictum about the dangers of revenge. But the film's theme gets lost in the chases, explosions, and other thriller movie stuff and the wildly improbable premises that support them. I'll give it 2.5 stars out of 5.
That was KXCV KRNW movie reviewer Dr. Carol Fry. You can find information and links to the events and organizations you hear about on Now Showing on the KXCV KRNW website, kxcv.org. You can also listen to archived editions of the program by clicking on the Now Showing link on our homepage. Please join us again next Thursday for another edition of Now Showing. In the meantime, have a great weekend. For KXCV KRNW, I'm Patty Hawley.